being here. We're so thrilled that you decided to join us. If you're from our community, we are ecstatic that you're here. And if you have children, I hope they are down the hall participating in our children's worship there. And I know that's been a great thing for the kids so far. One of the things that happens about, I don't know, once every couple of months is I'll get called from the funeral home and they'll say, "We've got a family that just needs a graveside service. Are you willing to do it?" They usually don't have a church home, and so it's an opportunity for me to help somebody. And so a graveside service is pretty simple. You kind of take about 15 minutes and you read a few names and you say a couple of prayers and read a couple of scriptures and talk just a little bit. But I always, for some reason, feel like I need to be there early so I can be very well prepared. So I have my favorite spot in the cemetery. That's going to sound a little creepy to some of you, but I have my favorite spot in the cemetery where I like to just go and park and roll my windows down under the shade of this tree and go over my notes and pray over the family that I'm about to serve. And for some reason, I was really, really early. And so I went through my normal routine because I am such a creature of habit, and I look at the clock in the car and it says I've got 25 minutes before the funeral starts. And I think, what am I going to do for 25 minutes? And so I thought, well, I'm going to walk around. And so I walked around this little section that is fairly new within the cemetery. And I started looking at tombstones. And I was starting to get fascinated by tombstones, by sayings that would be on there, and about words from family and design and all of that stuff. And one of the things I noticed is that there were a lot more dates that started after I was born. And I can't remember that ever happening at the cemetery before. That there were more dates that were pre or post 1970. And so I go back to my car and kind of start my little thing going over the funeral service again. And I keep thinking, heaven is closer than I think. That so often we have this tendency, especially when we're young, that we think that the end of life and the start of heaven is far, far away. But it doesn't take long just to walk through a cemetery and see that there are some dates that coincide with yours. And so this idea of how heaven helps us, I think, really matters, because heaven is closer than we think. And it's closer, and it gets closer every day. The early church saw heaven not just as a doctrine to be affirmed. It wasn't just a doctrine. They said heaven is on the horizon and heaven is on the other side of this life, but it was a truth that was meant to be lived. And I think the same needs to be true for us. Whether we're 25 or 54 or 85, I don't know, heaven is closer than we think, and it's a doctrine that needs to be lived. Because I believe when we live with heaven in our minds, it not only gives us a future hope, but it helps us in the here and now. Because how we live with God then affects how we live for God now. So we need to develop a mindset. I love this passage from Colossians chapter 3. Paul's going to start off in Colossians 3 and he's going to say, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things." What's interesting is the word that we have translated there, "set," is really "fix." Do you have anybody in your family? I'm sorry, I'm struggling with my words this morning. Do you have anybody in your family that's really good at being fixed on something? Let me just give you an illustration from our house. On Thanksgiving night, we are all sitting in our living room, and everybody has their phone or their iPad, and the two women in our circle, Paige and Nikki, they are reading off their phone, and Jonah is studying for a test, and I am prepping for a sermon, and we've all got the football game on. Now, Jonah and I are studying two different things as we watch the game, and the two women, they are fixed on that book. And some great play happens in the game, and I'll look over at Jonah and say, "Jonah, did you see that?" And Jonah will look over at Paige and say, "Paige, did you see that?" And Paige will say, "What?" "I was reading my book." She was fixed. And we could have been yelling and screaming and doing a touchdown dance if we were so inclined. And those two ladies in that room would have had no clue, because they were fixed on what was right in front of them. Okay, I want us to be fixed on stuff. Now, not to the point that we miss everything going on around us and on the peripheral, but I want us to be fixed on something that is great in store for us. And I think heaven ought to be our fix. The Bible says if you make heaven your fix, it'll fix a lot of the world's problems. Notice what Paul says, or the writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, the writer says, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Now notice what he says, that the writer is saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to fix our eyes on Jesus, and not only are we going to fix our eyes on Jesus, but that's going to cause us to look back at what he's done on the cross, and it's going to cause us to look forward to the fact that now he's at the right hand of God. And so our fix matters. And so when we've got this fix on heaven, I think it helps us in more ways than we give it credit. The first way I think it helps us is it helps us insist on different values and different priorities. So when Peter is writing the books of 1st and 2nd Peter, he's writing now to a group of second generation Christians. And in writing to this group of second generation Christians, they are kind of questioning a little bit of what the first generation practiced. And there's a little bit of teaching that Peter needs to do in the midst of that. And so he writes these things. In verse 11 of chapter 2, he writes, "Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires." Okay, let's just paraphrase that. You don't live here. You live somewhere else. Don't do the stuff that this does. And then he's going to go earlier in chapter 1, he's going to say this, "Since you call on a father who judges each man's work impartially, live your life as strangers here in reverent fear." Then I think what Peter is trying to tell this second generation of Christians is he's saying, okay, here's the world where you live in, but this really isn't the world you live in. We talked about that last week. But since we're in this world right now, we're going to live by a different set of priorities and by a different set of standards. Okay, I think when we realize this, when we realize that this is just the stop-off place until we get to the better place, we're going to change some attitudes about things. See, when I've got my fix on heaven, it changes my view of stuff. It changes my view of wealth. That I realize the stuff I have, the possessions I have, the house that I live in, the cars that I drive, whatever it is that kind of fits into that bill, that those things aren't near as important as they might be to someone else who's got no concept of what's next. It changes my attitude about people. That instead of seeing people as just people who are wandering around aimlessly doing whatever they do, I see them as people who need to hear what God has to say. Who need the same hope that I have, and then it changes my view of happiness. See, the things that make me happy when my fix is on this world, those don't really matter. I mean, the new car might make me happy for a little while, or the big giant screen TV during bowl season, that might make me happy for a little while, or this possession, or that possession, or this vacation, or this piece of jewelry, or whatever we're going to fill in those blanks with, those might make us happy if we're only fixated on this part of the world. But if we look beyond that, it changes things. Because when I start to look beyond that, I get rid of right now thinking. Let me explain what I mean by that. I think the world has got right now thinking all over it. Just start watching the commercials. Come buy a new truck, and you don't have to make a payment until 2025. That's like 12 days away. You know, what a deal. Come buy this new furniture and you can be interest-free for 18 months. Come get, and we've got all of these ads saying you can buy this and you can have this and you can get this and you can have it right now delivered to your house, and if you want it this day, we'll get it to you this day. I sound like a salesman, don't I? And that's right now thinking. That's, man, I could get a new recliner and a new TV and a new truck in the garage and have it all by New Year's. Instead of seeing beyond that. There are a couple characters in the Bible that have got some right now thinking problems. You got this fellow named Esau who comes home hungry. And he comes home hungry, and the word in Hebrew is he comes home starving. which probably means he has gone without food for at least a few days. But Esau comes into the family house, and Jacob, his brother, his younger brother, has made this great pot of stew, and Esau says, "Ooh, I'm gonna put some words into Genesis. Ooh, that smells good, and that looks good, and that's going to be tasty. Can I have a bowl of it?" And Jacob, being the sly little guy that he is, he says, "How about a bowl for your birthright? How about a bowl for us swapping spots? You can have a bowl of my great little lentil soup here, but I get to be number one son." And Esau is thinking, "I'm hungry and this stew smells good," and he's offering it, and what does my birthright really matter anyway? And so he gladly makes that trade. Or maybe an even more haunting story. King David is walking on a rooftop, and he looks down and he sees a pretty girl through a window. And he says, "Ah, there's a pretty girl through the window, and I'm the king." And the king gets what he wants. And before you know it, that pretty little girl has left that window and is with him. And David's whole course of life changes because of right now thinking. When I'm thinking beyond what's going to make me happy in this life, when I'm thinking about beyond about what's going to fire me up a little bit, when I'm thinking beyond the status quo of what the world thinks is great, and I've got my fix on something better than that, I'm practicing delayed satisfaction, and I think that really, really matters. Yeah, I had a young man who I've been working with for like 10 years, and he came to me, and he's not part of our church, but he came to me and said, "Man, I cannot make my car payment. You know, I envisioned that as soon as I got out of college, I was going to get this car, and I got this car, and they gladly gave me this car for 84 months worth of payments, and I can't afford the payments, and now I'm upside down, and I know if I sell it, I'm going to lose money. Help me figure this out." And so we started looking at his budget, and we started looking at things that mattered to him, and before he knew it, he figured out either he needed to get a second job, or he needed to bite the bullet and get rid of that car. And so he bit the bullet and he got rid of that car. And it broke his heart. And he walks into the coffee shop and he's all dejected. And he says, I sold that car today. And man, I went and I bought a used car. And I'm driving a 15-year-old Honda Accord. Now I didn't tell you what he was driving before, but he's made a downgrade. If you've got a 15-year-old Honda Accord, drive it till its wheels fall off. It's a great car. But he was so disappointed. And then so we start kind of talking a little bit more. And I say to him, "What would you like to have someday?" And he says, "I want that car back." I says, "Okay, well, you start saving this much money a week from your check. And then in a few years, you can go get that car." And so sure enough, he does exactly what I've told him to do. And he saves his money and he goes to the dealership and he pays cash for basically the same car that he had. And he drives it into the church parking lot, and he honks his horn, and then he calls me on his cell, and he says, "Come look at what delayed satisfaction gets you." Now, I'm not trumpeting delayed satisfaction just to get a car. Although if you can practice delayed satisfaction in buying anything in your house, I think that's good, because that means you don't borrow from the bank to get it. But we need a little more delayed satisfaction. We need a little more, instead of wanting it right now, thinking it's going to be the highlight of who I am, to say there is something more that matters in the long run. And maybe I need to make that my focus so it changes our attitudes. But I think also heaven helps us exist with a lot less stress. Okay, I was hearing a preacher years ago use this illustration, and it has stuck with me forever. And he flies all over the country preaching. And he said, "I don't care what airports look like. You know, I don't care if the airport has artwork in it. I don't care if the airport is color coordinated. I don't care if the airport has beautiful floors or not beautiful floors. I don't care. All I want is a coffee shop and a place to plug in my phone, because I'm only going to be there for a few minutes." See, that's temporary. The reason I don't care about how an airport is decorated is because all I plan on doing is getting off one plane and either going to a rental car or getting on another plane. Because it's a temporary place, a place that I'm only there as a brief stop off. And so I don't get stressed out about that stuff. Paul says this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. He writes, "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. That I need to start realizing to focus on things that are unseen, things that are going to last more than 5 minutes, things that have got a whole lot more stuff involved in it than just a car or a house or a thing in the room. But to realize that when I put my hope in heaven, it takes care of a lot of other stuff, including the stress I have trying to live here. One of the things I love about high school students is high school students live in the future tense. And if you don't believe me, let me illustrate it. Finals week is this week for RISD kids. I want you to ask your high school and junior high gets a little bit of finals. Ask your junior high and high school kids when they plan on studying for their finals. You know what they'll say? They will say 9 times out of 10, the night before. Now why? Well, Jonah once gave me this line, what if Jesus comes on Thursday and the final was on Friday? Well, then I've wasted time. Okay, study for your finals, do good, Jesus expects that. But they're living in the future tense. They're living, what happens if it snows 10 feet on Tuesday and the final's on Wednesday? Guess what, it's getting moved to Friday. We can study Thursday. We need to be that same way. Because I think when I start living with the future tense and I start living with what comes next as opposed to what's right in front of me, that it takes away the burden of all of the junk that is there. And I think that lightens our load. The third thing is I believe heaven helps us persist in the midst of suffering. In the midst of those trials that we've been talking about, in the midst of difficult days, when life beats us down, and you're ready to quit, you look up. That you realize, even when life is at its hardest point, we realize that Jesus didn't promise heaven on earth. He promised heaven in heaven. And so we focus on what lies beyond that, realizing that something great is on the horizon. Okay, I'm going to have to go to the dentist this week. And he's going to do a little drilling and a little filling and a little all kinds of other stuff. Who knows what it's going to do. But what I will think about the entire time the dentist is working on my mouth, he's going to talk about my shoes because the dentist likes shoes. I don't know why. But he's going to talk about shoes and I'm going to think about steak and ice cream because I know what's coming. I know that right now I don't really want to eat a bowl of ice cream with this tooth because it makes it kind of mad. But in the future, I know that's going to be fixed. And so instead of just being all bemoaning what's going on in my life, I need to look beyond the suffering and beyond the trials and beyond the difficulties that are right here and see that there is something on the horizon that is so much better, and it's even better than steak and ice cream. That there's something there that's going to matter. We read this scripture last week, but I want to repeat it again from Romans 8. For I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed in us. I think Paul is saying, here's what we're going through now, and you know what? It's not that great, and it's suffering, and it's awful, but what is to come is almost so great it is unspeakable to the glory that's going to be revealed to us. And the last thing, I think when we keep our fix on heaven, it helps us resist selling out to the world. Back in Peter says this in verse 11 of chapter 2. He says, friends, this world is not your home. This is from the Message, so it's a little loose translation. So don't make yourself cozy in it. Don't indulge your ego to the expense of your soul. I like the way he says that. This world isn't your home, so don't get comfortable. Okay, my confessional a little bit. It's pretty easy for me to get comfortable in this world. My life's pretty good. Not worried about bills. Not worried about what we're going to eat this week. I'm not worried about how to afford a kid's education. I'm not worried about sickness. I'm not worried about anybody in my family that's got a problem. I'm not worried about hardly anything. And it's pretty easy for me to just get cozy. I read this in a book once, and I want to adjust it a little bit. But the writer of the book said, the greatest enemy of the church is not persecution, it's accommodation. It's when the church has gotten cozy. Now, when the church has been persecuted, when the church has been under the thumb of whether it's Jewish leaders or Roman leaders or going throughout history, other leaders that have put it under their thumb, the church has actually thrived and gotten better. But where the church has suffered the most is when it has gotten cozy and it starts to look as much like the world as it does like the church. And that starts when we get cozy. That starts when we start to settle in and think, this American life is pretty good. It starts to settle in when our life flows so smoothly that I never need to cry out to God. That it starts to take over my surroundings when I figure I can do all of this myself. Who needs God? Okay, heaven ought to give us stamina. But the only way to build stamina, if I'm correct, if you're going to get some running stamina, the only way to get running stamina is to start running. And we're pretty good at being cozy. Paul said this at the end of Philippians 3. He writes, they're talking about this group that has gotten cozy in the world, and they're still coming to church. Their destiny is destruction. Their God is their stomach. Their glory is in their shame. Their mind is on earthly things. But, okay, whenever Paul says but, you better be ready because he's got an important point. But our citizenship is in heaven. And we eagerly await a Savior from there, the Lord Jesus Christ. Our citizenship is not here. So I don't live my life just like it's only going to be here. I live it for something totally different. Okay, our church is funny. We have a church that has traveled all over the country. And so whenever somebody says, I'm going to such and such a city, everybody chimes in. I'm going to Dallas. And everybody will chime, well, try this restaurant, try this restaurant, and this is the best barbecue, and you don't want to miss this. I'm going to Houston. Well, try this place and try this. You don't want to miss. Okay, let me say this. You don't want to miss. Now, I know a lot of good places you can go in Dallas, and I'd probably tell you don't miss those things, but I want to tell you more than anything, don't miss heaven for anything, especially anything in this world. Okay, let me be hard on you for a second, because I need to start with me. If something in this world is getting in your way of seeing that, then you need to fix what's in this world. And I don't mean fix by making that the fixation. I mean get that out of the way. If your job is getting in the way of you fixing on heaven, then maybe you need to get rid of that job. And if the relationships you've got going on and the friendships you've got going on, they are muddying up the road that ought to lead us to the right place, then maybe we need to fix a few of those things. And if our circumstance or whatever we're going to place in that, whatever is causing us to not see what God has got in store, then let's move that out of the way. Okay, I can't tell you what heaven is going to be like. The Bible's going to say streets of gold and have all kinds of jewels around it. I really don't think it's probably streets of gold and all kinds of jewels around it. I think that's just the way of a human saying it's going to be beyond your comparison. But here's what I know. In the middle of it is going to be the Father and the Son. And surrounding the Father and Son are all of the people that have followed the Father and the Son for the history of this world, together in one place celebrating the God that saved them. Don't miss that. Don't miss that because you want to live the American dream. Don't miss that because life is so perfect you don't need God. Don't miss that because life is so awful you can't find a better way. Don't miss it for any reason. The very end of Hebrews 11, talking about this Hall of Fame of faith, he says all these characters, they were commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. For God planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Notice the middle of that. God had planned something better. Okay, maybe you are in that place like I am, where everything is coming up roses. Life's just pretty good. God has planned something better. And maybe you're in the opposite of that, and you're wrestling, and you're struggling, and you're fighting fights that you didn't intend to fight, and you're just going through some hardship and some pain. God has planned something better. My guess is most of us are probably in the middle of that. We have good days, we have bad days, we have good weeks, we have bad weeks. And my word to you is God has planned something better. And don't miss it. So we're going to sing. Maybe you don't know how you get there. That's part of what the church is here for, is to help guide you that direction. If you want to talk about how you can be God's, find me, find one of the elders, find someone else in this room, and we'll gladly talk to you about how to get right with Him. And maybe you're just fixed on the wrong things and you need to refocus. If you need me, I'm here. If you need, again, elders will be at doors. If you need us, call us. Just let us know so that we can see what God is in store for us. So let's sing. Rollo?